There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. This is podcast number 937, May 6th, 2022. And Nasser, this is a special podcast. It's about the familia of F1Weekly.com. It's about a race driver, his girlfriend, and what happens in this beautiful world of motorsports. Nasser?
Yes, sir. This is a very interesting story featuring race car driver and a very well-educated lady, fast lady from Colorado, Miss Sabra Cook. And I have been following her career for a few years. She worked in Formula One also with the Renault team and raced in Formula W. And she will be in Miami doing commentary on the Formula W event and will be resuming her racing career shortly. And I would like to thank Sabra very much for her time. We met at the Barber Motorsports Park and I wish her all the best. So please enjoy this chat with her. And after that, we will talk to her boyfriend. Thank you. Okay, folks, I'm here with one fast lady from Colorado, Miss Sabra Cook. Sabra, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Actually, always good on a race day. Okay, I've been following your career for a few years. So first, give us a little background how you got interested in motor racing.
So my father used to race professionally in motocross and supercross back in the 80s for Team Honda. And he and my mother did not want my brother and I racing motorcycles. So we got into karting at a young age.
And how long did you do? Did you first experience, did you enjoy it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think he first sat us on one of those little 50cc Honda, little mini bikes. Yeah. Okay. And that was great. And then I got into a 50 Comer was the first go-kart that I drove, a little Honda. So it was a lot of fun. And yeah, I really got the bug for it when I was about 10 years old and started taking it more seriously.
Now, you took part in this evaluation for Formula W Ladies Series. Tell us how the evaluation went for you and your experience racing in that series.
Yeah, the evaluation event was awesome, actually. Like, it was actually very fun to go through all that process. It was pressure, but you learned a lot through the experience. And so I really enjoyed that the first year in 2019, and then racing 2019, and then obviously we didn't race 2020, but 2021. It was a great experience, met a lot of amazing people, being able to race on, you know, more European tracks, and then racing alongside F1 last year was definitely something very special, and I'm very thankful to have that opportunity.
Among the top level racing people, who were the coolest people that you met or you thought they are very cool? Toto Wolff, Christian Horner, or who else?
I didn't meet them. Who did I meet that was cool? Like, you mean like at the W Series races?
No, at any racing series, especially when you were racing in Europe.
Oh, any racing series ever? Yeah. Or just in Europe?
In Europe.
That's a tough question. I would probably say I actually really enjoyed Nico Hülkenberg. Yeah. But that was when I worked for Renault. That wasn't actually when I was racing with W Series. But he's very nice. He's very personable. And he was actually willing to, you know, take time and talk to us young engineers. So I enjoyed him.
Your favorite track in Europe?
I would probably say Brands Hatch GP and Spa.
Wow. You know, Brands Hatch was the first ever track I went to.
Yeah.
And that Druids Bend and Paddock Hill Bend and Spa Eau Rouge. What's your take on going in a fast car at Eau Rouge?
The first time that you go flat in a formula car through Eau Rouge is like, it's a feeling that you'll never forget for the rest of your life. It's something very special, and I'm very blessed to have had that opportunity.
And you mentioned about this working in a Formula One team. You won this scholarship, an incredible achievement. What was the main focus of your internship?
So at Infiniti, I was a vehicle test engineer, and then at Renault, I was a suspension composite design engineer.
Is there something, the racing side engineering, that you would like to pursue on a full-time basis?
So I was full-time, but then we were supposed to run W Series again in 2020, and so I stepped away from the full-time position, but definitely would go back to full-time later on, but you know, right now it's fully focused on the driving side of things.
This year you are racing in Porsche Cup. What are your expectations and goal for this season?
So this year I'm actually not racing because I got injured last season in W Series, and I had hip surgery 8 weeks ago. So I'm not cleared to go back to racing until September.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But once you go back, will Porsche Cup be the series you will go into?
Yeah, definitely looking at running in the Carrera Cup with Kelly Moss. They're amazing, and I'm here this weekend with Racing for Children's, and getting to experience their event for the first time has been great, and getting to see the kids has been a lovely time. So hopefully that will be the path forward next year.
Do you feel more comfortable in a single-seater or tin tops?
No, single-seaters are going to be where my heart is always. I mean, obviously running a 992 is something super special as well, but it's hard not to want to be back in a single seater once you drive one of those really awesome machines.
Now, these days there is a lot of push to get, you know, ladies, minorities, and this diversity thing going on. I have two questions for you on this. When you first started in competition bikes or whatever kind of racing, apart from boys making fun of you, or if they were, did you feel that there was some sort of glass ceiling, if I can borrow the cliche, against girls?
Yes and no. I mean, there are girls that have come before me have done, you know, with Danica, Sarah Fisher, Simona, Lynn St. James. They definitely kind of broke through, so they showed that it was possible. But I definitely think that there's a lot of other elements and a lot of other dynamics that women have to deal with in the sport that, as a man, you don't have to. And I think the key thing is for us to get more women involved is for more women to start, right? Like, there's less women that start, so therefore there's less women that finish. And I really hope to see those numbers grow again, but no, I never felt like there was a glass ceiling. I never thought, oh, well, I'm a girl, so I can't do this. I always kept pushing forward.
You know, I was talking to Lynn St. James at Daytona earlier this year, and we talked about, you know, like you said, the numbers game. Mm-hmm. It really needs to start at a karting level.
Yeah.
What do you think the Federation or the Racing Association can do to attract more young girls into karting?
Maybe create like driving schools or programs that specifically encourage young girls to come try it out. I think that's a good option. There are some programs that already exist for that, but at the end of the day, it's going to be also on the parents, right, and other families that get exposed to it and don't just put their little boy in it, but also let their little girl try it as well.
Exactly. And you know, we've had ladies like Shirley Muldowney, Michelle Mouton, very, very successful, so it can be done. Now, have you ever employed a driver coach to learn how to drive a race car faster?
Yeah, I did actually work more with a professional coach in 2018, and he's amazing and super essential to my success and just opened my eyes to new things, because I made the transition to cars very late, so I needed to learn a lot in a very short period of time. And it's critical to have someone there alongside helping you. I mean, sports has come so far in the last several decades that now everything matters. Like, everything is optimized so much, and so having that support team is super critical.
Do you have a marketing man or a lady going out knocking on doors and trying to bring sponsorship for you? How is that going for you, or how has that gone for you?
I mean, sponsorship is the hardest part, right? And for me, I'm mostly a more or less a one-woman show a lot of the time, and I do, you know, pretty much all of my own sponsorship, marketing, anything that has to do with media interactions, that's all done by me. I've tried to have some help in the past, but it's very hard to find good people that you can depend on and that actually get the sponsorships, you know, coming into the door. But that is the hardest part, which blows me away, because, you know, when a woman races, they all want to know, people want to know two things: who won the race and how did the girl do, right? So there's so much attention and eyes on that person that you would think more sponsorship would be invested in them. But 99.6% of sports sponsorship a year goes to men. 0.4% goes to women. I mean, that's honestly, it's honestly unacceptable. It's so skewed. It's not even 1%. So I really hope that that changes.
And when you're calling people, like you're saying you're doing it yourself, I'm sure you get a lot of people who show a lot of interest and get more information. Maybe conversation goes to the next level. And then when you need an answer, they don't answer the phone call or do not respond by email. Do you get a lot of that?
Oh, yeah. You get, I mean, people that get interested or sponsorship-wise?
No, people who show interest that they may be interested in sponsoring you.
Yeah.
And then not call you back.
Yeah, people love the idea. You know, race cars are sexy. They like it. But then when it comes to actually signing the contract, putting a pen to the check to sign it, it is always a struggle. And you're going to get more no's than you're going to get yeses. That's just how it is. It's a numbers game again. So that's, you just got to get used to hearing the word no and just keep going until you get a yes.
Now, I understand you will be in Miami doing commentary on the Formula W race. Can anybody beat Jamie Chadwick?
Oh, yeah. Jamie's already been beaten. So, absolutely, she can be beat.
Who can beat her in the championship?
I mean, Alice...
Among the drivers who are racing this year.
I mean, Alice almost beat her last year. It really came down to the last race, so I don't see any reason why she couldn't do it this year. Emma, you know, is very strong. She comes with a lot of experience. And then we've got a lot of young girls coming up that are very quick and learning a lot. So I think after Miami, we'll very clearly see who's going to be in the hunt and who won't. But either way, it's going to be a fun thing to watch.
Have you become friends with any of your competitors in Formula W?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're all in a very unique situation, and we can relate to each other the best through our experiences that we've had. So it was kind of inevitable not to connect with them and feel some sort of friendship with them, because we all share a very similar background.
Okay, Formula One is coming to Miami. Who do you like in Formula One as the top dogs, and who do you think will win the championship this year?
I mean, Ferrari have looked strong from the beginning, and that Charles is so far ahead now that as long as they keep it up, it looks like that's where it's going to go. But I don't know. You never know what can happen. They have so many more races left. It's hard to say, I guess, this early, but it is looking like a Ferrari World Championship.
Well, I appreciate your time sharing your stories. Will you please tell our listeners about your website, social media, so they can follow your career?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on pretty much every social media platform under SabreCook on Instagram and Twitter, and SabreCook Racing on Facebook, LinkedIn SabreCook, and my website is SabreCookRacing.com.
And if somebody wants to sponsor you, how do they reach you?
You can reach me at SabreCookRacing@gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you so much and all the best. Your boyfriend is working with Hunkos Racing. How did you find this Frenchman?
Actually, so he used to work for iTech GP, and we originally got introduced during the W Series selection process, but I was very much about business and didn't want to risk anything that way and have any issues in the workplace, so we didn't start, you know, being involved until long after the W Series season was over in 2019.
And now we have a chat with Sabra's boyfriend, who has traveled from oceans and oceans away to be involved in American motorsports. His name is Alex Vedi. And we met in St. Petersburg a few weeks ago when the season opener was here. And then we hooked up again in Alabama. We had a very nice chat, very interesting chat. He used to work in England, and I hope our listeners enjoy his story and his experiences. And my thanks to him for his time. Okay, folks, here in beautiful Sweet Home Alabama with Monsieur Alex Vedi. Alex, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you very much for the interview. Yeah,
you're very welcome, and a great pleasure to have you. You are French, but you grew up like 11,000 miles away from France. So tell us about your background and where the hell is this place where you come from?
This is very not famous. This is called New Caledonia. It's a French island. Basically, you know, France, there are many islands around the world after colonization, and one of them is called New Caledonia, and it's next to Australia. Very few people know it because there's no tourism there. And this is between Australia and New Zealand, basically, the Pacific. And so I'm born there, and I grew up there for 21 years. I study, I went to school there. It was a perfect life, you know, tropical, beach, coconuts. And when you are 21, then you need to move from Europe in Europe because, yeah, I mean, there's not much studies to do after that. So if you want to study engineering, you need to go back to the mother country, which is France, basically, from there, and which is what I did at 21 years old.
If there is any motor sports scene in New Caledonia, how big is it?
Yeah, massive. No, it's very, very nothing. No, basically, we had nothing when I was a kid, and when I was maybe 10, they built a go-kart track. It was pretty cool because you could run it in the two directions, you could clockwise and anti-clockwise, but apart from this, it was pretty much everything. There's a lot of car lovers in this island, but there's nothing at all, so it's just TV watching F1 races, and that's what it is so far.
What is the most popular car there, Citroën or Peugeot?
No, it's actually the pickup trucks.
Toyota?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's pretty close to the US, actually. They love pickup trucks and big cars. Peugeot and Citroën, no, they're not very good there, for sure.
Okay, how old were you and how did you catch the racing bug?
Well, right now I'm 26. I just grew up, you know, it comes from my father mostly. He was a driving instructor when he was younger in France on the racetracks. And he always been passionate about cars, racing for sure, but even road cars and everything. So I've always had his influence on me. And I was passionate with plane and cars, actually. And most I went into watching races on TV. Because once again, from the island, we didn't have any opportunity to race. So I was just watching it on TV and loved it. I was watching Formula One since I'm 7 or 8 years old. And, you know, and then it became part of my passions. And I knew when I wasn't really sure of what I wanted to do. I knew it was engineering, so I actually chose to come into motorsport quite lately, maybe when I was 20 or 21. Before that, I had no idea. When I was 21, I was sure that I wanted to go in motorsports and engineering in this because, you know, you work in your passion, which is pretty good.
Well, at F1 Weekly, we also have some interest in Formula One. So the question for you is, who was better, Monsieur Alain Prost or Ayrton Senna?
That's a good question. This is interesting. Obviously, Alain Prost is French, and I have so much respect for him. My dad was a big fan of Ayrton Senna, so all my life he was Ayrton Senna. And I loved him as well. And then I watched the movie about this rivalry between these two. But somehow it was weird because in this documentary, it was very about Ayrton Senna, and Alain Prost was seen a bit like the... not the bad guy, but, you know, the guy to beat or not very nice. And I think it's not fair. And a lot of people would say probably Senna. I think I have so much respect for these two guys, honestly. Even Prost is amazing. I don't want to create problems. I'm not going to answer this question. Both of them, they had their time. I love Senna for his personality, for sure. I would say this.
Okay, what was the first motor race you ever went to? And what do you remember most?
Very late. The first race I've been to, I was working because when I was a kid, once again, on the island, we didn't have any races. No, that's not true, actually. We had rally cars. So I went to see some rally stages there. But on the racetrack like this, it was very lately. It was when I was starting to work in motorsports and I was traveling with the team on the racetracks for the first time. And that's really when I started watching races for the first time. And it was on DTM's championship, so I was following DTM's cars. That was pretty cool. And then I saw my first F1 races very late. I was probably 22, and I was already working in motorsports, and the first time I was watching an F1 race, so it was quite late. I could have flew to Australia when I was younger to watch the Melbourne Grand Prix in F1, but I've never done it, so yeah.
Okay, what was the first F1 race you watched in person?
Silverstone. That's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, it is very cool. Okay, I heard a rumor your girlfriend is a fast lady. Please tell our listeners about her.
I shouldn't have told you this yesterday. Yeah, well, her name is Sabra Cook, and she's an American racing driver. To me, very talented for sure. She's the first female to win the U.S. Championship on the go-karts. She was in the World Final Championship as well. And we met in Spain, in Europe, because I was working on the tracks and she was racing there. She made her way into Formula Cars, starting in the U.S. first, and then she got qualified for W Series, which she raced for 2 years, because it was cancelled in 2020. She's a very, very good driver, very talented. I think she's doing quite great. She got hurt last year, which is why she didn't perform at the best. But she is definitely going to go back on the tracks and show everyone what she's capable of. For sure, very devoted. I'm quite impressed to stay with her and see how hard she works every day, because I think she's one of the hardest workers for sure of all the grid. That's, you know, now spending time with drivers, I can tell, and I'm very proud of her for this year.
She won some sort of a scholarship and worked with a Renault team?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. Yeah, so she not only...
I'm here to please you, man.
I can see this. No, so she's also, which is what's impressive, she's got a engineer background, which is she did a school called the School of Mines in Colorado, and we have this equivalent in France, this school as well, and it's very famous in France and very big. This is a big school, and she went up to the graduation, and she's got an engineer degree, mechanical, and she's very good. She worked for Renault F1 for 1 year, at the same time that she was racing. So she was performing well in the championship, and in the same time she was working on the Renault F1 2021. So
now in Europe, general thinking is Americans don't have passion for Formula One. Were you surprised to meet an American girl interested, passionate, and good about motor racing?
I was not surprised to find women passionate about motor racing, because I know there's a lot. I know they cannot express themselves as much as they would. I was more American, yes, it's maybe a bit more surprising in F1, even though this last year it's not true, because you have Zak Brown, you have Haas F1 team, so it's becoming more and more international. I was more impressed because she, as you said, she won the Academy, Renault and Infiniti Academy. It's one winner per continent, so she won the America one. And it was I was quite impressed that, yeah, racing and doing this, it's something tough, you know. And then, of course, having see some female drivers and engineer and also working in F1 and working alongside a French team, Renault, and it was quite nice to see, because, you know, there's a lot of saying and talks about motorsports, and it's a big male sport, and this is obviously very important, and I'm very happy for that. But she's not the only one, and there's a lot of women now and in the whole motor racing world, and this is very good, and it should be more and more for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's such a small world. Many moons ago, a very good friend of mine, a kid I grew up with, he went to the same school, Colorado School of Mines.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, now, you work for a racing team called Hi-Tech in England. Tell us about your racing experience there and various drivers you worked with.
I started as an intern. I was studying in Paris, and I went to England as an intern in Hi-Tech GP. And I started working in W Series, which is the Women Championship, which is where I met Sabra. And I was starting as a data engineer, so just downloading the cars, the data, checking everything, doing the reliability mostly, and then giving information to the race engineers, and they would do their work with the drivers. So this first half of the year, I had no experience at all, and I wasn't working with any drivers. And then toward the end of this year, I was able to make some progress and work a bit with drivers for the first time. It was in W Series, so I worked with Miki Koyama, I worked with Sarah Bovey, these drivers. Shay Holbrook as well, she's American as well. And that was about it the first year, and then I had to go back to school for a few months. And when I came back to Hi-Tech for a second internship, I was put in British F3. So this time I was a race engineer. I was working with a driver called Ushijima, Risa Ushijima, and it was a very good experience. American guys as well, American Japanese. And I made my first step there, and then I went to British F4 as well, working with Rima Jufali. That was very interesting. I was, at this point, Hightech sent me into another team. So I was working with a team called Argentine Motorsport. And at this point, I got hired by the Hightech as well. So there was the end of my internship, and they hired me. And so I did this for another year, and then I did another year of British F3 with a driver called Tom Leben. And same thing, I was sent by Hightech to a team called Elite Motorsport. They were just starting in British F3. And Tom Leben was 16 at the time, and working together was very nice. I was his race engineer for a year, and we did some quite interesting results. And that was my third year as a race engineer now, and that's how so far I was before going to England and to America. Sorry, that's my England experience so far. Yeah.
Well, next question is about America. You are now with Bullcross Racing. What made you move across the pond, and how do you find the American racing scene?
Well, what makes me move? after I met Sabra, we were together. She was living in England, and she moved back to the US. And at some point, my contract with Hightech was finishing after 3 years, and they asked me if I wanted to renew it. But at some point, I wanted to move on a bit and settle together, and discover a bit more the world and some racing experience. So I went to the US, and I got hired by a Yonkers Racing team, and from there. It's a very different experience. I mean, a lot of things are pretty much the same for sure, but there are some massive difference in the way we work, the way we, the role that everybody has, you know, mechanic, what they do, engineers, what they have to do. Sometimes it's a bit different in Europe. If you ask me about level and about working, I think it's probably tougher in the US. Because there are less people to do the same thing. So the championships are not, I would say, it is not developed in the mind, you know, the mindset of everyone is not as big as in Europe. So in Europe, you would have much more people. It's quite a bigger thing. In the US, it's very more of a niche. So the people there, it's just a fewer people to do the same thing. So here we have more responsibilities, more work. But at the end of the day, the racing is very good here as well, and the fact that it's, you know, everything in the same calendar with IndyCar and everything, this makes it very interesting. I like it a lot.
Okay, are all young drivers easy to work with, and how do you deal with drivers who think they know better than mechanics and engineers, in case you have experienced that kind of a punk?
Yes. This is just a personality question. I mean, it depends on every type of driver. Generally, when they are kids, they are very easy to work with because they assume that they don't know anything, so they just follow the advices. This is where our work is becoming very important as well, because if we give them wrong advices, they will follow them. I had some tough drivers to work with. Some that would think they would know everything. And this is very hard. This is, at this point, you need to be very talk a lot with the environment, with their coach, their parents as well, to make sure that they know that they need to calm down and don't try to do our job for us. But it becomes quite frustrating most of the time. It's a big fight because, you know, they would go on track, and if they not perform well, they would always think it's because of the team or the car, and blame everything but them. You need to go through with this and just talk about it with their coach, make sure they be given the good advices when they're back home with their parents and everything. And then at the team, you need to make your way through it. And but generally, I mean, he always end up quite okay, because it takes a few races to settle properly, and then everybody's on the same page, most likely. So, and I was quite lucky. I mean, this happened to me once for sure in British F4. But since then, I always had drivers that were very good to work with. And this year, working with Enam Ahmed, and he's got a lot of experience. He knows very well what it feels like. Sometimes he wants to tell us what to do on the car, and that's the moment. But he's very happy when we tell him to calm down and we have this in control, and he's very happy to just do a step back. And no, it's very nice to work with him here.
Okay, in this year's championship, Indy Pro 2000, you said you have Enam Ahmed and also Rhys Goel. Have you noticed any major differences in their racing style and how they operate during the weekend?
Yes, very different. Basically, we are talking...
We need some dirty lowdown, man.
I'm not, no, because poor guys, no, I mean... I need to... No, they're both very good, okay? Well, I mean, this is very different. You know, one race in Europe and he's now 22 years old. The other one always race in America and he's 17. They're both very talented. Enam is much more on the analyzing everything. As I was saying, you know, the car, the setup. He's got a very, very good feedback, so he knows exactly what's going on. And Rhys is a bit more... You know, feeling, going in the car and do whatever he can with the car he has, and the feedback is okay, but he's not as strong. He's still learning a lot about this, so that would be the main difference on how they approach the weekend. You know, Enam is much more the developing the car and everything, and Rhys is much more, but yeah, in the performance. But it makes it easier for Rhys actually, on the way that when he's in the car, he's thinking nothing else but just driving. You know, Enam is much more about thinking, and overthinking. So that would be the main difference. But then they're all very serious. They're both very much on time for the meetings and everything. They're very devoted. They work a lot together. They're really keen on working together. I would say driving is very different between these two. Enam has more ability to change his driving to make it better. Rhys has more ability of keeping driving the way he is, but improving time on his own. I would say so. That would be the main difference. Driving and, as I say, you know, approaching the way they approach. You know, one is feeling and the other one is more in the head. Look who's behind you.
Oh my God!
Yeah, here she is. Yeah, you got it.
Miss Sabra. Hello.
Hi.
Nasser, we've been waiting for you since yesterday.
Oh yeah?
Yes, we need to talk.
He really wants to talk
if
to
you
me.
Have okay. some minutes later.
I have to be back at the Center Palace for an interview in like 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if you want me to come back after that. Or
can you do that, please, if that's possible?
I can do that. I just wanted to drop this off, though.
And just so you know.
I'm cleaning the truck and then we carry it tonight for us to the car because the car is back behind. Miles away.
Should I just take my backpack and
do that? You need it?
And just so you know, I've been following your career for a few years already. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'll come
back. Okay, I'll be here. Thank you.
No problem. Here she is.
Okay. So, okay, next question is very important.
Mm-hmm.
We hear this in junior formula, even all the way up to Formula One, okay? And you're on the technical engineering side. I think you're the best man to answer this question. Do teams really sabotage the other driver in the same team or try to help one driver over the other at the expense of the other? What say you? When I say help or do, intentionally. You know, obviously, if you have Ayrton Senna on one in car and Satoru Nakajima, we all know which way the resources will be allocated. But do teams really intentionally, deliberately try to screw up another driver?
They will not, because I will tell you why. They probably do in the biggest championship, actually, but you need to think when in the lower categories like this, you don't have any paid driver. They're not professional. They're just kids. But that also means they pay you for the seat. So as a team, the drivers for us, they are customers, okay? So they pay for to be here, and one season can cost like $100,000 or $500,000 more, like most likely. So they basically they pay a lot. So they are your customers. So as a team, you need to deliver the best you can for both drivers. You can see this if when you go in higher categories, one of the drivers is paying, and the other one is the talent and is not paying. In that case, the talent need to deliver, because if he doesn't, obviously, they will put the advantage of everything on the one who's paying, which is the logic, yeah? He's the customer. But this would happen. It doesn't seem, but it would happen more in the big championships, because in the lower categories they are customers, and you know teams, they need to have a good reputation as well. So if they do such a thing, the customers would, well, first of all they would stop paying, but also they would just spread the word, and the team would be screwed then. So I mean, my experience is only 4 years, but as far as I saw, they never did it in this lower category because of this, because they cannot do it with customers, with people who pay. If you do this, you're screwed.
Yeah. Okay, for young kids who are interested in racing and want to get involved in racing from technical or engineering side, what would you advise them to get into racing? How to get into racing?
Well, you know, it's a racing world is quite tough, especially on budget. Well, obviously, the best advice I could give would be to first of all, it would be to make sure that you have a plan, basically. Okay, that would be the first thing. You know what you... I mean, you cannot know years in advance where you're going to be, but you need to be devoted. You need to work on yourself a lot. You need to drive a lot, for sure. Obviously, the biggest advice would be to drive every day, go-karts or whatever. But... yeah, the biggest advice I would give, if you want to do it in the long term, you need to be more than just a driver. You need to, unless you have a big budget to start with, if you don't, you need to really make sure that you know how to talk to people, how to look good, you know, how to approach sponsors, how to... This is all because we're talking about racing for years, okay, not just one season. So you need to build a strong basis with your reputation, with all of this, and this is what makes it hard, because you also need to work on your driving and everything. So the biggest advice would be, don't be scared, okay, because everyone can do it. Just go for it, work a lot, drive a lot, but don't be just in your bubble of, okay, I drive, and people will do the rest for me, okay? You really need to work on yourself as well to make sure that you have the good people around you, that you can find budget on the long term. And then, if you can do this, then it will be just pleasure, because you will arrive on track, no pressure, and deliver the best. So, yeah.
Your long-term goal: IndyCar racing or Formula Uno?
I have no idea. No, I mean, I will see where life takes me. Probably in a shorter term, in the next 5-6 years, I would see myself more in the US here in IndyCar for sure. And then it depends how each championship evolves, you know, in the future. You never know. I was a big passionate of F1 for sure. And coming from a French country, you are like in Europe philosophy, and IndyCar was not such a thing there. But now I'm in this world as well. I'm learning so much, and I think this is an amazing championship. And I would be very interested in working with this, probably this for the next few years, and then once you're in IndyCar for a few years, you can just go to F1 as well. And I might make my way for that in a few years to explore a bit more. Yeah, we'll see. Depends on my personal situation as well and everything. So yeah, short term, I would say IndyCar for the moment, but F1, it would be a dream for me to work in F1 for sure. I wouldn't say no. Yeah, so we'll see.
I hope you make it to F1, and when you become technical director of Mercedes, don't forget poor people of Paris like myself, okay? Now, final question. Who will be 2022 Formula One world champion? Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, or Nicholas Latifi? The last one was a joke.
Poor Nicholas.
Or who would you like to see win the championship?
Oh,
French-speaking Leclerc?
Yeah, I mean, not only French-speaking. I mean, Leclerc is such a big hard worker. He's a nice guy, you know. Yeah. Not because he's French-speaker. He's not actually French. He's Monegasque. But, I would love to see Leclerc. He totally deserves it, for sure. Talking about the way it's going right now, he's on the leader, so... I would love to see him, for sure. Max deserves it. He always deserved it as well. I would love to see Lewis as well for the final. I mean, people would tell me, no, he won too many times. But because he's about to retire soon, I would love to see him just for the last one and go away. But, The way it's going now, I would like to see Charles. I mean, that would be my answer. Even, well, you know, they all deserve it. Carlos Sainz deserved it so much as well.
Like,
yeah, I would say Charles Leclerc probably right now. But not because of his French, because he's a good guy. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Alex, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.